Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses, where I talk to Catholics across social media who are doing great things to enrich our society. Today, I got Ryan Hernandez, who's going to come on and share some powerful information about what's it like to grow up, or not to grow up, but to be in like a cult environment. He's going to share some of the ins and outs of how he got recruited, experiences, and what ultimately led him out, and also just provide invaluable insights on that type of lifestyle. So thank you for coming on and sharing crucial information with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure. So I always like to get these things started off quicker than sooner than later. So let's get started. So I know your the story of you joining this organization is probably like episodes and episodes and volumes of books. But me asking you to summarize it don't really do it justice. But if you could try to give me like the beginning, middle, end of how you got a heard of this organization, how you got acquainted with it, what was it like being in there, the formation, and what ultimately led you out. So let's hear it.
Yeah, so starting from the beginning, I'm born and raised in the LA area. I'm actually from Bellflower, California. It's kind of closer to the Long Beach area, but still in the LA County. And I wasn't born into a cult. There are many cult survivors out there who are actually born into it. And you might have heard of these other organizations like Jehovah Witnesses or the Mormons. And then you have a variety of different branches. But I grew up raised Catholic by a very loving, supportive Latino family from El Salvador. And my Catholic education was actually through the Salesians. So it was a very good education. I went to St. Dominic Savio in Bellflower, followed by St. John Bosco, a very good, they're very known for having a good football team. Shout out to SJB football over there in Bellflower. But anyways, it wasn't as if I was born into the cult life. Sadly, the recruitment process that happened was that there was this community, a new forming religious group. And, there are so many religious communities out there. We have the Franciscans, we have the Jesuits, we have the Salesians, Dominicans. I can go on and on. But there was this new community that was present in LA, which actually originated from the Philippines. And my viewing was that this is a legit Catholic community. But what I didn't know was that they weren't being totally honest. So this was a growing community, but the way that they presented themselves was as if they were already well established, and that by me joining, it would launch a academic pursuit, as well as the possibility of not only becoming a missionary in foreign countries, but also the honor of becoming a priest one day. And so the way I was recruited was spending time with them. But not only that, but they would have like Eucharistic congresses, which were amazing. I'm not going to lie. But the trick with cults is that they don't give you the whole truth. And then there is a bit of manipulation to kind of get you in. So one of the tactics that is used is called love bombing. So to get you in, to get me in, there were like some of the priests from the community telling me, oh, Jesus loves you so much. Or they would kind of like pose as if they had these spiritual gifts. And I'll give you an example. It's like, imagine someone coming up to you and saying, God told me that you are meant to leave your family life and you're supposed to join the priesthood and join us. And so they kind of gave me that vibe that these are holy people, that they can be trusted. And I was only 14, 15, 16 while this was happening. And I saw them as a spiritual leadership. You know, they pray the rosary, they really spoke very eloquently about reverence, about the Eucharist. And then there was a mixture of conspiracy theories. And now, besides the love bombing making me feel special, now they brought in this fear that, you know, the world is going to end. There's going to be the apocalypse. You gotta act now, Ryan. And my thoughts were, because I was still in the middle of high school, my thoughts were, well, I still got a couple more years. And I actually had the ambition at that time to go to university. I was already looking for a future. But then what cults do is called they do thought stopping techniques. And one of the thought stopping techniques that they applied was, well, the world is going to end. You know, what is the use of you getting those degrees, getting those diplomas when God is calling you, Ryan, to join us now? So I was like, well, damn. I mean, a bit, I all right. I mean, the world is going to end. So that's kind of the beginning of my journey into that community.
So it's interesting when you're sharing the story because, like, normally times when you hear about cults and the movement behind them, it's largely kind of centered in like Protestantism and like these quasi-Christian groups, right? But for me, hearing that it was like a Catholic-based or Catholic-centered cult is really astonishing because. I mean, from a Catholic background, it's like Catholics, elevate, we are the one true church, and like we are free from error and we are free from any type of hint of Protestantism and any of that, any of those type of things. So for me, hearing like this information about your story is really fascinating.
You really hit on a very important point because I myself, it took me years to come to terms and to accept that I was in a cult. And I think the reason why it took me such a long time is because I didn't have a understanding of the term cult. And I think from my background, when I heard the word cult, I would think, like you mentioned, you know, Protestantism, some sects, you know, like you have was it Jim Jones, I think his name is Jim Jones, or you
The
have
People's
like the
Temple, Jim Jones.
or Branch Davidians. I think they're also here in Texas, somewhere in Tech. They were before El Paso. You have that branch. So my definition for cult was either, you know, extreme Protestantism, or it was always it went immediately to New Age. Everything, and even there are some books like that I've read from the 80s that are actually Christian based, and it describes cults as only New Age, and so it was hard for me to say those words. I was in a cult because over time, my understanding of cults wasn't just New Age or, you know, people who look bizarre. My understanding of cult became, okay, you have the leader who has like and I'm not talking about the Pope. I'm still a practicing Catholic, but you have a leader who doesn't want to be questioned, who wants extreme total authority. There is a pass for manipulation, for abuse, for secrecy. And another reason why I think many Catholics don't want to use the word cult for some groups is also because I think many of us, including myself in the past, I would think that cult and occult were the same thing, you know, with like the dark stuff. And yes, there were dark stuff, but the way I see cults is, you know, there is, again, you have the leadership, which they don't give you the whole story. They don't give you the whole truth. You have manipulation. You have abuse, fraud, trafficking was involved. And so after years, after leaving, I was able to come to that. But we met through X, formerly Twitter. And I think at that time when we were connecting a couple of years ago, I was still in my journey of understanding. So, it's still fresh, but I think I'm in a better place where I can talk about this, because sadly there are a lot of Catholics who don't want to talk about it, and they have tried to silence people who speak out against this form of abuse.
Yeah, good point. You touched on a lot of good points, like the Branch Davidians, and I'm gonna come back to you later on. But I want to continue more on your journey. You already talked about what influenced you, what how they like wrapped you in. So what happened once you decided to like finally get in? What was that like, and what ultimately led you out of that experience?
Well, I was still in the middle of high school, and first thing was trying to convince my parents. And what the community offered was that they would allow me to finish high school from the I would enter the religious life. I would start my postulancy, and then if everything goes well, I'd go to my novitiate and then take my vows and all that. But along the way, I'll be still getting an education. So my parents were like, okay, we don't want our son to go. But I was just so like on fire. And I felt that because these holy people told me that this is going to be my vocation, it's like, who am I to deny God? And they give you this guilt, like if you don't say yes now, you'll never, God will never give you that same calling again. So it's either you answer God's calling now or you're gonna lose it, and you will be a misfit for the rest of your life. So I joined, and my parents, gave me their blessing, because the assumption is I'm still gonna be getting education. And as practicing Catholics that my parents are, they're aware that if someone wants to leave a religious community, that it's no problem, especially since I'm just starting out. The thing is that once I joined, I wasn't really allowed to get an education. Yes, they kind of started to allow me to do some homeschooling for the high school curriculum, but I wasn't allowed to do the homework. And I would ask them, why can't I do my assignments? And they would say, because it's all New Age. And I was like, well, the assignment is to read, I think one of the books was like Where the Red Fern Grows, or to read like history books, science books. And so in my mind at that time, because we can say the word brainwashing, they really had me thinking that they were protecting me. So it's like, Ryan, we're not going to give you this education because it's trash, and it's going to infest you with evil spirits. So in my mind at that time, I thought, wow, I'm so glad I joined, because I'm being protected from all these evil doctrines. But at the same time, I didn't see that I myself was being indoctrinated. And so from then on, they cut my classes. I went to the Philippines. I did years of a religious monastic life there, and it was I don't I mean it's very broad, but I don't know where to start in terms of my religious life in the Philippines.
Okay, that makes sense. So once you get to the Philippines, what's some stuff that you encounter that's like warning signs or stuff that makes you start to question that this may not be the best environment for you?
Well, part of the theology of the community was suffering, victim souls, and that the more we, and this was something that the founder himself, he would tell us, and that we would have to repeat. And it was something like, okay, repeat after me. I'm good for nothing. I'm worth nothing. More pain, more gain, more suffering, more souls saved. Something like that, where it's like it's implanting in our mind, kind of like a hypnosis, that we need to cleave to suffering itself, and that by all forms of suffering, we're going to be saving souls. So while I was there, my first few years in the Philippines, it was extremely difficult. I mean, The food was different, of course, culture. But not only that, but the practices. I'll give you an example. We had this thing called the practice of a holy death, and it sounds great. It actually comes from the Salesians. And from what I've read, what the Salesians do is, I think like once a month, they'll do this exercise where they will meditate on, memento mori, meditate on death, pray on how they want to live their life. And it's really more like a one-on-one with God experience where you're trying to kind of navigate what are some things that I want to fix in my life. But I didn't know that at the time. The way we practice the exercise of a happy death was the superior of the community would announce, and I'll give you an example. The announcement would be something like this. Today, Brother Ryan has passed away. And so they would make so they make an announcement to make it sound as if I or someone else had passed on, and then you have to play the role of being dead, of being deceased. So we're in the chapel, and you have to lie down as if you're in the state of of death. And the community, they will pretty much they'll call you out for all your BS. For example, it's like, oh, Brother Ryan, you were always hungry, you're gluttonous, and they would do that. And I think that the intention behind it was so that it's like a fraternal correction, so that they can correct you. And but the crazy thing was that moment of happy death, exercise of happy death, it was a period where they would say like bad things about you. You're lazy. You were a stupid brother. And it's supposed to kind of like be like a scare tactic so that when you after that exercise, you can be a happier person and follow Christ more closely. And if they said anything that's humiliating, you have to act as if you're dead. And this was an exercise because for the rest of our life in that community, we had to be dead. We had to show no emotions, no expressions. And even that, I remember, was considered a sin. So this practice, this preparation for a happy death exercise, for me was also a way to kind of make us become more robotic. And it was supposed to be like you're dead to the world, but it really, I think it was a cruel exercise, which many of us lived through.
Okay, and then it does. I can see how you said it was supposed to be good intention, but it could also be in the form of like brainwashing you and keeping you controlled there. So how did you ultimately leave this environment in this organization?
Well, the leaving was hard because I was very zealous. I mean, our lifestyle was we would wake up at 12:45 in the morning, start off, you get ready, you do your get your coffee, and then at 1:30 in the morning, you're in the chapel for morning prayers. And you're in the chapel either praying the rosary or doing whatever until maybe 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you do work, then prayer, and then the day ends at 10 p.m. So at 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., that's not that many hours of sleep. So one of their things was a lot of sleep deprivation, which kept me there for so many years. The fear that anything that I do is going to be sinful. But I think what started to turn me was that I was starting to go through, maturity because I joined at 17. And once I turned about 24 or 25, I started finding my voice and expressing myself. And I would question, like, why are we like being so harsh? It's like, and it's like, you better shut your mouth. And so one of the consequences was that I was put in solitary confinement, in isolation. But the way they did it was, it wasn't like I'm in a box. It was more like I'm in the chapel in adoration, but I'm in there alone all day with the Blessed Sacrament exposed. And I can't talk. I can't leave because the Blessed Sacrament is exposed. I'm stuck there. And if I say anything, then they will, I guess you could say, gaslight, and it's like, oh, you're not happy being with Jesus. So it really brought this, my mind really felt like it was suffocating, not being able to express my pain, my loneliness. And this went on for 9 months. And then I got in trouble for talking back to one of the sisters. She deserved it. I mean, sometimes you gotta speak up and hold your ground. And I didn't say anything uncharitable, but it's like, hey, like, why are you acting like this to me? I'm not doing anything wrong. So I get in trouble. And this time I was sent to the basement for 3 months. But the thing is that because it's a cult, the way I describe it is an end times cult, because the way they identify themselves, you know, within the community was that when the end is coming, our group is going to be like the light of salvation for the rest of the world. So for us to survive, we have to have like this end times basement. But the brothers in the community, we had like our own lingo. So we would call it the end times dungeon. So there you have all the canned foods. We had our own like a well. It was like ready for the end times, you know. And so I stayed there for 3 months on my own, totally pissed off, totally upset that I can't talk to them. If I ask for guidance or spiritual, you know, like a spiritual direction, it was always I'm the bad guy. Or I remember once I was called out for actually writing a letter to one of the superiors begging for some form of guidance because I didn't know what to do. And next thing I know, in either the homily or, you know, during one of the announcements, indirectly, I was called a queer for writing a letter asking for guidance. So it was really all these things. Plus there was abuse, there was whippings. All of that, really over the years, I started to just say enough's enough. And I think that's what led to my escape.
That's good, man. I'm glad you found your voice in that process and decided enough was enough. And you had like an end point where it's like, I'm going to get out of here, which kind of leads into the next question. So how did you find empowerment and strength through all the spiritual abuse and even physical abuse, now that you've been out?
Well, one thing that I hated after leaving was, like, amongst the ex-members, we couldn't really talk freely, because I think so many of us, we continue to have those thought-stopping techniques, because once someone were to bring up something negative, another person would try to change the course of the conversation. And I myself am guilty of that. And I remember, and you know, I'll never forget, I was with some ex-members, and one of them was just opening his heart on how tormented he felt psychologically and, you know, spiritually, not being able to free himself from that place, and that how there was just so much guilt. And as he was getting in his in the groove, as he was continuing on, I kind of stopped the conversation and you know, tried to redirect the conversation. And so, but years later, I saw that other people were doing the same to me, and I started to open my eyes and realize that many ex-members weren't ready to have that conversation. And so there came a point where I said, you know what, the heck with it. I'm gonna write blogs and share what happened, because every time someone tries to share about the either the abuse or, you know, being put in solitary confinement, it's always that that person needs to be silenced. So I decided that I needed to write some blogs, and then I started doing podcast episodes to kind of vent. So I kind of forgot the original question. If you can repeat that, actually.
No, you're on the right track. I'm asking, how did you find empowerment and strength, you know, post leaving that environment of the cult? Okay.
So I think the the way I found empowerment was not staying in the state of shame. Because when I left, I mean, I was there for a few years already after I asked to leave. I had wanted to leave. And it's like, no, because you've taken the vows of chastity, poverty, and obedience. But my vows are temporary. And it's like, you know, isn't God calling us to freedom? You know, to like, isn't there supposed to be it's not a coerced, but at the same time, there is this guilt. So when I left, you know, I started living a life of, you know, just dating women and going out and, you know, that kind of lifestyle, which I didn't originally want, but I think that I did it out of anger, just dating anybody, going out, partying. My first time experiencing those things, my first time drinking and all that. And I did it because I was really empty. It's like, well, if I served God for 11 years and all I got was beatings, humiliations, shame, and these are Catholic people, you know what? I'm just going to live a life of the opposite. So I did, but it was hard because like I felt like in both sides, one of like serving God extremely and one of, I don't want to say serving the enemy, but serving myself, I found a bit of an emptiness in both sides. Or not, maybe not emptiness, but just being lost. And so my way of trying to kind of find my way was through slowly, you know, doing some adoration here and there on my own, because even adoration was kind of traumatic for me because I would be whipped in adoration. So it's like, okay, you know, slowly going back, finding better friends who would actually listen instead of telling me, oh, Ryan, we don't talk about that stuff. That's all in the past. Just forgive and forget. I thought that was all a bunch of, that wasn't good advice. So I needed to really detach myself from those people. And eventually over time, you know, going through therapy and, you know, going back to church, going to different prayer groups, Bible studies that were friendly, peaceful, no slapping, no beatings, nothing like that. I think that kind of warmed me up and was able to give me the support and the strength to really finally say, all right, I'm going to speak. And it was scary, but I think that it's a necessary conversation for the church today.
Right. And you took those baby steps to get back into finding your own spiritual practices and like beliefs that were yours versus somebody coercing you and like putting like abuse on you to accept them. So that's good to hear. So you said I know you created a podcast and you write and you, besides you speaking individually on your own experiences, you sometimes invite others to come on and share their unique experiences who had similar backgrounds. So in this process of you encountering other people who have similar backgrounds and cults, what are some of the similarities that you noticed? And even what things do you find different at times?
I think one of the biggest similarities that I've encountered was shunning. Because one of the tactics that this group does is they're better than everybody else. They're holier than everyone else. They pray. One of our requirements is you have to pray 10 rosaries a day. You have to do a whole bunch of prayers. And that's beautiful. I mean, I'm not going to squash prayer life. But the sad thing was that they were using it, especially the founder, using it as a stepping stone to say, look, we do all these things because we're holier than everyone else. And it was really hard to connect with people from other cults because I thought that my experience was something isolated. But once I started to speak with other survivors from other cults, I saw that their communities many times also had this way of like a holier than thou. We're holier, we're better than you. or there's a lot of shunning, especially like in the Jehovah's Witnesses. Oh, like if you're caught drinking, okay, now like the penalty for many of them is they don't use the word excommunication. They use disfellowshipped. So you once you're disfellowshipped in the Jehovah's Witnesses, you can't you're if your family has nothing to do with you anymore. Your friends, if they're Jehovah's Witnesses, they have to shun you because you are considered as kind of like the scum of the earth. I'm not sure exactly how they put it, but I mean, you're gonna you from interviewing so many survivors, they are made to feel like the scum of the earth, and that is exactly how I felt from this Catholic community. Which I now call a cult because upon leaving, they made me feel shame, shunning, and it's like, you know, you couldn't survive how strict we are. You know, you're weak, you're a loser. That's the kind of feeling that I got, and I think that's the that's what many ex-members we saw that, and I think that's implanted in so many of the minds of many of the ex-members is that they think still, oh, I have to suffer. I need to live a life only of pain, of shame. I have to be quiet about that. And I, you know, as a Latino growing up in LA, you know, there's a point where you gotta speak up. You gotta say things as they are, no BS, say it as it is, and let's not avoid it. Let's confront it. And I know that's not everybody's style, but that's a style that I said, you know what? I got to embrace that Latino style from me. For, you know, that's in me. I got to embrace it and let's go. And people were very upset saying things like, Ryan, why are you being an agent of Satan? Or why are you trying to destroy something that is so holy? And that wasn't my intention. My intention is to talk about abuse and that hopefully that by me speaking about what happened, it can bring awareness to other people so that they can avoid the tactics that I myself fell for.
Yeah, it's important and impactful to share. So a question I didn't prepare you for, but I'm wondering as you're speaking, when you think about famous leaders of cults in like the last 50 years or 40 years, like Jim Jones, for example. Jim Jones, he played into the social concerns of like black and white people at the time. Like for instance, 60s and 70s in a lot of segregation, a lot of discrimination, a lot of prejudice. He sold like a social gospel of liberation and like, hey, you come to me, come to our church, this is like a utopia, and like you can have peace and we can live in one accord and we can have heaven here in this church and we can have heaven in Guyana too if you come with me. So he's kind of like not a kind of, but he preyed on people's like weakness and do you think like those leaders in cults they look for like those areas that insert in people's lives that they're vulnerable to so that they can prey on them?
Well, I think that there are some cult leaders who are brilliant. They're brilliant con men. And I think that he was a con man. I think he knew what he was doing. Then you have other cult leaders like mine, the one who I used to be with, who I think that, you know, there is a intelligence to what they're doing, but at the same time, it was just chaotic. And there was like, I'll give you an example. Like one day he'll have like a revelation sort of thing, and then the next day it's totally changed. Where I think that some cult leaders know what they're doing. They know that they're manipulating, and they know that they're doing it for money hungry purposes, for greedy intentions. Then you have leaders such as the one that I went through, which I've seen, you know, the greed, but I don't think that they know what they're exact. I think that a part of me thinks that they believe that they truly have this one-on-one connection. And one of the examples was because the community that I was in, we were we were at a time allowed to stay in Dover, Delaware. And then someone had a psychological problem, went crazy. I mean, sad to say, had a breakdown or an episode. And so, but the thing was that I think what led to that was that the founder was very, he saw himself as this holy person, as this exorcist. And we were just doing exorcisms every day on everybody. And there wasn't even, in the Catholic Church, there is like a formula. You can't just say one day, all right, I'm going to do exorcism. All right, guys, come on, let's huddle up. Let's do an exorcism. There has to be, first you have to get the doctors involved, psychiatrists, you have to get the bishop involved. And yet, this founder saw himself as superior to every. So he's using Catholic things, sacraments, sacramentals, which I think, they in themselves are not harmful, but the way he was applying it was dark. So with the exorcisms, this guy, he then now thinks that he's possessed and he's going all over town, running through the streets. So it was a big thing. Then the diocese gets wind that we're just doing all these exorcisms every day. So then the diocese decides to remove our community. We are no longer allowed to stay there. But what happened was our founder, who's above the church, who's above the law, was, secretly, we would still celebrate mass. And so it was just you have your cult leaders who I think are really are doing it either for the money or for the power or both. And you have this other forms or even gurus who do it because they really believe that they have that power. So it's either you're a con man or you have psychological issues, but because they are holier and better than everyone else, I don't think that they will ever go to counseling or go through some form of therapy.
That's good insight, and thank you for sharing. So my last question is, so you went through this process, you were in this organization for at least over a decade. So how have you changed as a result of this experience? This could be good or bad. How have you noticed you've changed as a person since then?
Wow, that's a very good question. And it's hard to answer because I still am a bit on my healing journey. But I think one of the things that struck me the most, during my change was how harsh Catholics can be. I used to be really engaging in Catholic Twitter, and it became not just negative, but also very toxic. And it did remind me a bit of the cult that I was in. And I'll give you an example because at the time I would say, oh, I'm a practicing Catholic. But for me, practicing Catholic meant, I went to mass on Sunday, or I go to mass every day. I do my rosaries. I do my Stations of the Cross. I do my novenas.
It became like a
But
loaded term.
for me, it became an actually it became a half term, because for me, to say you're a practicing Catholic, it doesn't mean just going to mass or that's what we're required to do. That's like the minimum. But for me, practicing Catholic, it became a different meaning, where where's the charity? Where is the kindness? And maybe I disagree with so many people, but instead of saying, screw you liberal, or screw you rat trad, maybe just calm down, pray for them. Have this going back to the humility, kindness, joy, patience. These are things that I felt that I was neglecting, because I always said, oh, I'm practicing Catholic, I do all those things, but yet I was unkind to people. Or like going back to the exercise of a happy death, you're doing that supposedly fraternal correction with a spirit of trying to break them down. So what changed in me was that, okay, I'm going to go back to the sacraments, but I think that's something that I need to do in my new life is try to live my faith by, again, practicing kindness, smiling at somebody, or if someone is having a bad day, instead of thinking, oh, what the hell is that problem? Maybe what's that guy's problem? Maybe he didn't go to mass, or maybe he didn't say prayers in Latin, or whatever. Just for me to shut up, stay calm, and to do what Christ expects me to do. And one of the reasons why I framed my mind that way was because when I was still in the cult, I actually met up with a Salesian sister in LA. And one of the things that she told me was, Ryan, if someone isn't holy or praying, she's like, she was telling me many religious have this desire to just like beat the holiness into them or to shame them to make them become holy. And she told me, that's not your duty. That's not our duty as Christians. And that's none of your business. If that person is proud or impure or doesn't go to mass on Sunday, your business is to do what Christ expects you to do. And that is to practice love, practice kindness, practice charity. And so that had, I think that had one of the greatest impacts in my life, that conversation on piety is great, but it's not the whole story. The whole story is, you have your prayer life, but also you live it and you bring Christ to others through your kindness, through your love, through humility.
That conversation that you had with that religious definitely sounds like it was transformative, and it had a, and it still has a long lasting impact on you. And as you said at the beginning, you are, it's not like a one time sign, said, deliver thing. It's a continual journey toward healing and recovery as you learn more about how this significant era in your life impacted you and how you grow as a person. But in throughout this whole conversation, I think it's very important to just understand like how we are susceptible to cults and like the messages and the propaganda and the way they persuade you to get into them. I think about so many different I mean, it seems like every other year in the news cults come up. Just like last year in Kenya, there was a guy named Paul McKenzie who had a hunger strike, and his hunger strike, he was a leader, and his hunger strike killed some 400 people. And even though not a cult, but this year it seemed like it was all the news that the Duggar family and that whole family dynamic with the father and their children and them being like persuaded and governed by the father. Just always seems like cults are around, and we need to take better discernment and understand like how these systems play a big part of our life. What you gonna say?
Well, I was gonna say that, you see a lot of cult vibes all around us, and I think one of the misconceptions is that a cult is just a big group. But a cult can be a family by the way they practice the formula. You have this one authority you can't question, the wife and the kids, they gotta stay silent, they gotta just do what their father says, or the leader. So even in families, it can have cult vibes where there is that lack of freedom to think. And I think that's another problem in some Catholic cultures or religious cultures where thinking is seen as a bad thing, or questions. It's like, why is it like this, or why is it like that? And it's like, you need to be quiet. You can't ask that question. So I think that even in the homeschooling system, I'm not trying to speak for or against it, but if you're not careful, you can also find yourself kind of falling into the tactics that cults do. So for parents, like just be aware, like what do cults do? They don't allow, questioning. They're very suppressive, where it's like an extreme suppressiveness, and then it's inviting guilt and shame and trauma, and these children are growing up with that. And for a Christian household or family or community or religious community or church, that shouldn't be the foundation. Guilt and shame shouldn't be the foundation, but yet that's what's happening. And I think that we can do better.
And as you were speaking, I was just thinking about, we often talk about like mental trauma and physical trauma, but spiritual trauma is a very real and neglected like aspect that we don't consider. And like the seeds that we sow, even in like the family unit that you mentioned, where it can be one person at the top who has controls everything, the narrative, he controls the resources, he controls the family direction, he makes all the calls, all the calls for the family and guidance, and the wife or whoever under that husband can buy into that type of narrative and just sow all type of seeds of trauma and abuse with children and those around them. So I think what you said is very important. Like, use your discernment and type, always be aware of how these systems and like these different dynamics of cults play out, so we can be aware of them. But I definitely appreciate you coming on and sharing this crucial information. I'm glad to see that you are on a pathway of healing and recovery. And I know this, again, it's not a science still delivered type thing where it's just one and done. It's a continual journey. And I pray that you continue to cooperate with God's grace as He continues to give you newfound love and new mercy and grace every day so that you can, walk and live your best life as a child of God in communion with Him. So that's what I have to say to that. And I definitely appreciate you coming on and
Well,
sharing.
thank you for inviting me. It's been an honor being here. And to the listeners, if you are a cult survivor or if you find yourself in an environment where you think it's culty, well, I hope you find the support. Educate yourselves. Don't be afraid to read books like from Yanya Lalik or Stephen Hassan, which kind of break down how cults work and how to break free from that coercive environment. So, to all the listeners who may be in cults or may be in that environment, I wish you the best of luck, and I'll also be keeping you in my prayers.
Yeah, definitely some invaluable resources on the journey to understanding like your own unique situation and like your own unique experience in those cults. So definitely cop those if you were are in that type of environment. Well, you guys pray for Ryan and the work that he does with interacting with members and former members of cults and helping other people be enlightened about the dangers of those cults. And you guys can tune in to the next episode.